Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Gamers Without Borders. I am Patrick Mifflin alongside Teresa Sammons and Kayla Owen. And tonight we're just going to have a fun little show to wrap up the year and go into the new one. And Kayla and I have curated some lists for theoretical retro minis like we talked about last show. And ultimately decided that that would be a good episode to finish the year on. So we're just going to be going over our lists and discussing what we think of each selection and what we each might have included or what we might have omitted for something else and what have you. Kayla, do you want to get started? You've got a really interesting pick there.
Yeah, so the mini that I really want to see is kind of an obscure one, but I really want to see a 3DO mini.
I can think of one really good reason for it, but yeah, go on.
Well, there's a few really good reasons for it. So my dad had a 3DO and would let me play it, and I really liked it. I think that compared to like the CDI and some of the other CD-based consoles at the time, it was one of the better ones. So some games that I think would be really good for it would be... I think probably the one that most people would want would be Super Street Fighter II Turbo.
Yep. Which that's exactly where I was going.
And then Samurai Showdown, which was the best version of Samurai Showdown besides the Neo Geo. Wow. I also have some other games listed here like Wing Commander 3, Myst, Road Rash, the original Need for Speed. And then one that I really, really want to play and I would be willing to spend the time to translate would be Police Knots, which another one of Hideo Kojima's games.
I didn't know there was a 3DO version of that.
Yeah, it came out for the PlayStation and 3DO and sadly never got an American release.
No, I thought they'd jump all over it for 3DO, being that it existed, and they needed all the games they could get for it.
Metal Gear Solid, actually, which was originally supposed to come out for the 3DO, and if Police Knots was put on a theoretical 3DO mini, I would like to see anything, any concept art or anything they had for Metal Gear Solid for the 3DO, which there's a little bit on the internet.
Tech demo? Yeah. Oh, wow. So is that your list?
Yeah, pretty much. And then I have a few other ones, like there was Night Trap and Corpse Killer, which both came out on the Sega CD and the 3DO. Wolfenstein 3D, Dragon's Lair.
Tailor-made for the 3DO. Okay. So so what other systems have you curated for this week?
Well, the other thing too, the other thing that I was interested in, which kind of rolls into a Nintendo 64 mini, would be a 64 disk drive mini. That was something that I really wanted to get when it came out and just never came out in the U.S.
Yeah. So would you fold that into a 64 mini, or would you be, are we talking about a standalone?
Well, I'm not really sure about how much space those games take up.
They're pretty modest, like, actually.
And then having the ability to like was Mario's artist being able to save your work on it. I almost kind of feel like it would need to be a separate thing, but it really depends, I guess.
They're nothing compared to the other systems that we'll be going into on this show. I think that after having seen the size of the images, the system was actually made for its capacity to write data. So I wouldn't really have any reservations about that. Do you have a game list for it?
Well, it's pretty small. I mean, since there weren't really that many games that came out, I think the thing that I would really want to see most would be the Mario Artist series and the F-Zero X expansion pack.
Yeah, and that would be a good thing to fold into an N64 mini, if nothing else. I think that would be the one that most people would be getting utility out of. So... okay. All right. So were those your selections, or did you do any others that you wanted to talk about? Because we don't need to stick to one list per system.
Well, I didn't really curate any other systems. There were some that I was thinking about, like playing the original Animal Crossing on a Nintendo 64 Mini and having a VMU for the Sega Dreamcast Mini. But other than that, I really didn't curate for anything else.
Okay. Yeah, that reminds me, Teresa's probably going to kill me for that one. So, yeah.
Worry, I'll add. Like, I'm sure there's one you didn't think of for the N64 other than...
I thought of it. That's not the thing. I was trying to keep it to lists of 20 to 24 games. And so there were cuts made. And yeah, Animal Crossing didn't make the cut for either my 64 or GameCube lists. Mm. So. But I'm going to start with the Sega Saturn Mini. Now, before I go into any of these, I curated these lists not as like dream big sort of lists, but more of actual feasible, licensable games. So for Nintendo systems, you're not going to see anything that Rare owns. You're not going to see anything that... would be in sort of dicey licensing territory. Disney is on the outside looking in for any of its IPs, so we're not going to have any Shadows of the Empire or Rogue Squadron on the N64, things like that. No Kingdom Hearts on the PlayStation 2, so I just want to preface that. I was trying to condense it to lists of games that were mostly owned by the platform holders or were otherwise third-party titles that were easily acquirable. Okay. So the first game on my Sega Saturn Mini list is not a popular one or necessarily an iconic one, but it is the game that Sega hedged their bets on out of the gate for the Sega Saturn, and that is Bug. Pretty straightforward platformer with some unique mechanics to it. You can kind of see where some of its ideas bled into the Sonic Extreme concept. But it was a pretty fun game altogether, and I had it at the time. I enjoyed it for what it was on the Sega Saturn, so I feel it was important enough for the early days of the system to include it on there.
Okay.
So that was my first pick. And for my second pick, I'm going to go straight to the other end of the system's lifespan and pick Burning Rangers, because it was the last game off the presses in North America. It was a very good game. Not enough people got to play it. This would be a really good chance to sort of rectify that. And they haven't forgotten about it. There's a stage dedicated to that game in Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. So it's still very much in mind at Sega, so hopefully if they ever did a Saturn Mini, that would be included on it. And the next two picks are going to be kind of no-brainers from the early days. Clockwork Knight, another really important platformer. And then pretty much their launch staple racing game in Daytona, USA. I don't think you could even suggest putting forth Sega Saturn Mini without having Daytona USA on there.
Yes, but are there any other racing games?
Oh, yes.
Okay, I will hold my tongue.
The next one, it was only an import, and there are going to be a couple of these sprinkled in because there are some imports on these systems that were just so important that you have to include them even in a North American version. Kind of like how...
Well, there's some on the TurboGrafx.
The TurboGrafx has a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And they put Snatcher on there, and that doesn't even really lend itself well to a lack of a translation. But yeah, there's stuff like that in each of these systems' histories that you just have to include. And the first one on this list is going to be Dead or Alive. Because that game was pretty groundbreaking for the time, and it really stood up well next to Virtua Fighter 2, which it was very heavily informed by. So it's a popular enough Saturn import that I think you have to include it. And with that having been said, I think you can guess what the second one's going to be, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. The next game there are not enough copies of this in circulation, Dragon Force. It's a fantastic strategy RPG. It's working designs. I'm sure they could still cut a deal through Gaijin Works to get it licensed for the North American Saturn. It has to be there. After that, we'll go for AM2's other fighting game, Fighting Vipers. That is one that could really use a revival today. And again, Sega remembers it. It's been in the conversation for all kinds of side projects and what have you. It has to be here. Absolutely. Only our second third-party game on the list coming up next, and that's going to be Guardian Heroes. And that ties into peripherals for the Sega Saturn Mini, because it supported many more players than two. It was a 6-player beat-em-up, and it was a very good one. I think it's still available now on the Xbox 360 digitally, and it's a fantastic game. And Treasure, you know, they don't make bad games, period. So Treasure's going to factor very heavily into these lists, and that's going to be the first appearance of them here with Guardian Heroes. This one's going to be a little more of an obscure fighting game in Last Bronx. It sort of came up around that time with Virtua Fighter 2 and Fighting Vipers, but it kind of got caught in the undertow of them and everything else that was going on around that time. But it's a pretty good example of some of the alternative fighters that were going around at the time. And it was Sega, so you know, they were still making a solid product in it. It wasn't the redheaded stepchild of the system by any stretch. So that should be there. The next one is The Legend of Oasis, which is an interesting top-down action RPG. It doesn't quite live up to the Zeldas or Ys of the world, but it was what we had on the Sega Saturn, and it was a fully serviceable game in its own right. And, you know, anyone who likes those types of games should absolutely experience it. The next one is obvious. Include the analog controller, don't include the analog controller, but include this game on the system, Nights into Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way you get away with leaving Nights off of a Sega Saturn curated list of any kind. So that one has to be here, even close to the end of the system's lifespan. At least in North America, it was a very good example of what that system could do. And it's still a fantastic game to this day. So absolutely include Nights into Dreams on there. The next one, Panzer Dragoon 2's Vi. Amazing rail shooter, even now, but especially for the time. Again, there are not enough copies of it in circulation, and it's a gaming experience that everyone should have. So sticking it on the Sega Saturn Mini would be a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. You don't put the first game on there because they're still trying to sell the remake on the Switch, and there might be other versions of that coming, I think. So, you know, let that version shine, but get the sequel there for people buying the Mini. And, of course, you can't talk about Panzer Dragoon without including Panzer Dragoon Saga. We're venturing into TurboGrafx Mini territory here because Saga is going for stupid prices on eBay, as always. But they've gone into truly absurd territory now. And really, it's a fantastic game that more people need the opportunity to experience. And I think the inclusion of this one would cause the Saturn Mini to fly off shelves. So, yeah. Absolutely include that one and see what happens to collectors.
Yeah, because I mean, why not have such a thing as a mini system seller?
Yep. I mean, Nintendo did it with Star Fox 2.
Yeah.
Which was literally unreleased until then and wasn't even as good as Panzer Dragoon Saga, but it had that mystique about it. And that's what Saga shares. And the fact that it's actually a really good game at the same time, I think you have to put it on there. So I said there was another import coming, and of course it's Radiant Silver Gun.
Solid.
Sega Saturn is home to a lot of great shmups, and Radiant Silver Gun is kind of the crown jewel of them. And I say that as somebody who, like, Radiant Silver Gun is not necessarily to my tastes. I think it was a little too cumbersome in the controls department, but for what it is, I mean, again, Treasure does not make bad games. And Radiant Silver Gun, you can put right there alongside Panzer Dragoon Saga as games that would sell the fuck out of these systems. Like, Sega would probably have a hard time keeping up with demand just with those two games on the platform. So, you gotta have them there.
Yeah, no argument.
The next one is another one that would sell multiplayer adapters for the after, or for the, I think it's Hori that's making them for the TurboGrafx Mini, and I imagine they would do the same for the Saturn, if not Retrobit. Saturn Bomberman.
Yes, thank you.
You want Bomberman at its best? Cram 10 players on the screen at once and just watch the chaos ensue. Absolutely my favorite Bomberman game of all time, whether you're talking about the multiplayer, the single-player campaign. It's just an outstanding Bomberman title, and Konami has been really friendly to these retro minis, not just on their own, but look at what they've put on the Nintendo and Sega ones. I mean, there's no reason that Saturn Bomberman would be an unrealistic pick for the Saturn Mini.
Yeah.
So throw it on there. Now, Teresa.
Yes.
You asked me if more racing games were coming.
Yes.
Of fucking course, Sega Rally Championship has to be there.
Thank you. That was exactly what I had in mind.
I would say it is the most important of the two, you know, staple racing games on the Sega Saturn, and it has aged beautifully. There just really aren't enough good things you can say about it, and in contrast to Daytona USA, the port was remarkable. Mm-hmm. They just dropped it from 60 frames to 30 frames, and everything else seemed to carry over seamlessly. And so, yeah, that has to be there. Another one is kind of a must-have, but I wasn't sure how to implement it. But at the very least, Shining Force 3 has to be there in the form of Episode 1, if nothing else. Now, where you go into kind of dicey territory, do you reach out to the fan translators who did the second and third episodes and see if they want to get paid for using their localizations? Because you could do that and put the entire trilogy on there. But that's a
possibility.
And Sega has been really fan work friendly of late. You know, they hired their fans to make Sonic Mania, so I wouldn't be surprised if they hired their fans to make Shining Force 3 in a form that is already completely done, available on a Sega Saturn Mini. Now, I try to restrain myself a little bit from multiple occurrences of a single franchise on any of these lists, but I think you have to also have Shining the Holy Ark and Shining Wisdom. They are very different games from Shining Force 3, and they are still very good games. So I would not hesitate to include both of them alongside Shining Force 3. And that also really establishes a solid core of RPGs on the Mini. Of all different kinds at that. So next up, I'm moving over to fighting games. Street Fighter Alpha 2. I still think it's the best Street Fighter Alpha, and it's the one that most people are going to associate with the Sega Saturn. That's the one I'm putting on here. And yes, there's a very good Alpha 3 import, 03, that you can get on the Sega Saturn that takes advantage of the RAM cartridge. But I just feel like if you're going to take one game that is symbolic of the entire Street Fighter series as a whole, it has to be Alpha 2. And again, I'm really doing my damnedest to keep one installment of any given franchise on each list. There will be a couple of more instances where I break that rule, but you'll understand why without question. So, moving on from that, it can't be a Sega Mini without Sonic. And Sonic Jam would be a cop-out because it's pretty much included on the Sega Genesis Mini with a couple of omissions. So Sonic 3D Blast was on the Genesis, but it was very clearly developed for the Saturn. And I think that was... it was very iconic at the of the time for Sega, and I really think it, as much as I'm not a fan of that game, I think it absolutely deserves a spot on this list. So, that is going to be the Sonic series representative on the Saturn Mini here.
Controversial.
Yes. Controversial even from me, but I just didn't have any other options unless Sega wanted to finish Sonic Extreme on their own time and have that as another must-own system seller for the Mini, which I would totally be on board with. But I'm assuming that that isn't in the cards. So, yeah, 3D Blast. If you bought a Sega Saturn, that was what you got for Sonic. So that's going to be the case here. Next up, Virtua Fighter 2. This may be one of the three biggest system sellers the Saturn had.
No doubt.
The fact that they got it working on the Sega Saturn, let alone as well as it did, was remarkable. And the fact that they actually included both arcade revisions on it at the time, like no other publisher, no other developer of fighting games even thought about things like that. The closest you got up to that point was maybe the 16-bit versions of Street Fighter II Hyper Fighting that also included Champion Edition. But Virtua Fighter 2, these were not marketed as different versions. These were just thrown on for you to enjoy, and it was a nice shout out to the arcade players who were really at the time the lifeblood of the genre, that they let you play both the original release that, you know, day one for the, might have even been day one for the Model 2 hardware, but at the very least it was day one for obviously for Virtua Fighter 2, that version's on there, as well as the 2.1 update that fixed a bunch of things. And I think they even included patch notes for 2.1 to point out to the uninitiated what the differences are, which you don't even see that prominently today.
No.
So, yeah, that game absolutely has to be on the list. And then a couple more Sega titles to finish it off. First off, this one I had a few reservations about. And just by telling you what it is, you'll understand why. Virtual On Cyber Troopers. Do you reach out to Retrobit or Hori or somebody to remake the Twin Stick?
No.
If you don't, is the game still worth playing?
I'm also going to say probably not, because I didn't play it during its original run.
Yeah, see, when you play it on a gamepad, you use the D-pad and the X, Y, A, and B buttons as two sticks. Have you ever played Cyber Sled?
No, but just thinking about the logistics of doing that is painful.
Yeah, like you move... with the twin sticks, you move one stick up and one stick down to turn, or you put them both in the same direction to move, things like that. So substituting the X, Y, A, and B buttons for the right stick is not ideal. But I think it was an important enough game that even if you stick people with the stock Saturn pads to play it, I think there would be interest. So that's why I included it on the list. Now, hopefully a Retrobit or a Hori would come through with a twin stick peripheral. Hopefully find a way to make it cheaper than the ones at the time, but make it available and let players make of it what they will, I say. So, following that, we finish off this list with Time Warner Interactive's VR Virtua Racing. This was so close to being an amazing version of Virtua Racing, but I think Time Warner just tried a little too hard to put their own signature on it. It's not even a problem with the gameplay or the content involved, but simply the way the game is structured. It's still, I would say, a must-play title for any fan of Virtua Racing. And I may be a little bit biased on that because I am one of them wholeheartedly. But yeah, that seems to be a perfect way to close out this vertical slice of the Sega Saturn experience. So Does anyone have anything they want to, any thoughts they want to add before we move on? Or
Kayla, anything?
Well, I was thinking, even though it's not really a good game, I wouldn't mind seeing Sonic R on a Sega Saturn Mini.
That would be interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it didn't suck, it just... But I could definitely see that included, and if only to give people more Sonic options.
Yeah.
Besides 3D Blast. Yeah, I could definitely be convinced of that. It is worthy of a list like this. I'll put it that way. So, yeah, that was my take on the Sega Saturn Mini. Moving on, I curated a list for the Nintendo 64.
Okay.
And again, I already know Teresa's going to kill me for one omission, but the first one on the list, 1080 Snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
It was a one-off game, well, until 1080 Avalanche came along, but it didn't really stick as a Nintendo franchise. It was still a solid title. Nintendo doesn't get racing games wrong when they do them. And so, yeah, you have to have that on there. Maybe if only to check a box, but there are people who would put a lot of time into it if you included it on such a system.
Mm-hmm.
The next one was kind of a collaboration, but I'm given to believe that Nintendo is on the ownership side of that collaboration, and that's Cruisin' USA. Midway developed it, now owned by Warner Brothers, but I believe Nintendo is the IP holder and would have no contention getting this game on an N64 Mini. And it came out at a time when, you know, you could count on your hands the number of games that you actually had available to you on the Nintendo 64, because that came out at a trickle. It was the Nintendo 64 launch was probably the closest thing that we had to the PS5 and Xbox XS launches until then. But it was a perfectly serviceable arcade racer. It was very Nintendo. It was somehow still very Midway. And people loved it. So throw it on there for sure. Another collaboration that Nintendo has proven they own the rights to and would have no problem licensing or not even needing to license for a Nintendo 64 Mini is Diddy Kong Racing.
Mm-hmm.
That one is, you know, you just get people talking about the Nintendo 64 classic titles, iconic titles. That one always comes up. So that it has to be there. There's going to be a lot of racing on this list just because Nintendo 64 was such a good racing platform. So full disclosure there, we've already got three. But straying away from that for just a moment, Doom 64.
Oh, God, yeah.
Bethesda has proven that Doom 64 is still a very popular installment of the series, even though it didn't have multiplayer. And I think recent reception of the game is what has rendered it worthy of a retro mini. Like, if it hadn't been for the re-releases on the Switch and so on and so forth, I don't think I would have included it on any of these lists. But after seeing how people responded to it and were genuinely nostalgic about it, yeah, it belongs here.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, F-Zero X, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Now, circling back to Kayla's idea, I think you could absolutely include the expansion pack on here. But even if you just put the core game, I think that would be plenty to sell extra controllers on a Nintendo 64 Mini, which you know was going to happen because there's no way they're going to pack four controllers in with it. F-Zero X would definitely be a controller seller for that. Next up, shout out to Satoru Iwata, Kirby 64, the Crystal Shards.
Yep.
That is mandatory. It wasn't one of the more popular titles in the series, but it still 100% belongs there. And you won't convince me otherwise. Next one, The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Yeah. I think people would riot if you didn't have that on there.
Yeah, and they wouldn't release it that way. They wouldn't.
No. But I did leave off Majora's Mask because that is a case where I'm sticking to my one title per franchise rule, and there will be a violation of it involving Zelda later on. You can probably already guess. But I'm towing the line here as a result. Mario Kart 64, another gamepad seller. It's not one of my favorite Mario Kart titles, but it seems to be one of the player base's favorites. And again, like Zelda, I think people would riot if you left it off.
Mm-hmm.
And on a similar note, Mario Party 2.
Okay.
I don't get it. Like, I've never been a Mario Party guy. I understand why you would have to have one of them on there, and my understanding is that Mario Party 2 is the one that was never surpassed. So, I'll go with it. Mario Party 2 on the Nintendo 64 Mini. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time for a rarity. Ogre Battle 64.
Ah, yes, that would help sell systems. Because, boy, that was hard to find.
eBay victims, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Obviously, Paper Mario goes on there.
Yeah.
We're kind of eking out an RPG selection. Much like Nintendo themselves, they didn't really make much of an effort, but a couple of them popped up, and I think Yamauchi owns that one more than anything. Like, he kind of stole art his own system. It was pretty sad. Now we're going to the launch, Pilot Wings 64, the other game on the launch. Only a single-player game, but an altogether enjoyable experience, and it had a variety to it that subsequent attempts at similar games make me realize was underappreciated at the time. So, Pilot Wings going on there. Next up, another controller seller, Quake 64.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to be dealing with Bethesda, you might as well go all in. And it was a good port. It had good multiplayer. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not much else to say besides that on there. Next up, Resident Evil 2. Now, you know I'm not a horror guy, but the fact that they made Resident Evil 2 work on the Nintendo 64 is still a massive, massive accomplishment. It was called the Impossible Port at the time. And I think that alone gives it the cred that makes it mandatory for the Nintendo 64 Mini. And I don't think Capcom would be in any way unamenable.
Yeah.
Next up, another midway racing game, San Francisco Rush. I don't think this one really gets its due. I understand why it's not, you know, regarded as an absolute classic, but I still think it could get more respect than it does. And I'm going to give it some of that by including it here. This one might have a little bit of a licensing snarl, but I don't think WB would necessarily stonewall it. So I'm putting it on here. And if it couldn't be licensed, then fuck it. Put Majora's Mask in its place anyway. But I really think this one is possible. So I mentioned that there will be a sprinkling of imports, and it's looking like there's another trend going on with those that I didn't notice when I was putting together these lists, but Sin and Punishment.
Oh.
Yeah, we're going back to the Treasure Well, because Treasure doesn't make bad games. And honestly, Nintendo has already spruced this one up for a North American release during the Wii Virtual Console days. So I think it would be a simple matter to include it on a Nintendo 64 Mini. Mm-hmm. Next up, Star Fox 64.
Yeah.
Sell more controllers. And really, even if you only made a one-player version of a Nintendo 64 Mini, which they would still need to be drawn and quartered for, Star Fox 64 would deserve to be on this list. So there's just no question. If you are making more controllers available, it has to be there. Now, the next one is a Konami pick that a lot of people might not even know exists, but I had to include it because I've basically been evangelizing this series since we started doing the show. And that is going to be Star Soldier 64. It had some kind of subtitle. I can't remember what it is right offhand, but Star Soldier 64 has to be on my list because not enough people have even encountered that series. And, you know, if you like shoot 'em ups, you should.
Mm-hmm.
So next up is another obvious must include, Super Mario 64.
Yeah.
I'm sure Nintendo would do something kind of trollish again, like include the Shindo version instead of the original release. But, you know, I
don't know that they would.
I'm not a speedrun guy, and I don't really quite get speedrun culture, so I wouldn't really care one way or the other. But I still think they kind of would use the Shindo version, just knowing how they've been. And finally, this is one that I would not even look at a Nintendo 64 Mini if they didn't include it, until it got hacked anyway. Wave Race 64.
Yeah.
You got to have Wave Race 64 on there. So that is my Nintendo 64 Mini. Any feedback on that?
Well, you forgot Harvest Moon 64. I forgot.
Right.
You forgot. Forgot, Pat. You totally forgot it. It's arguably the best Harvest Moon that they ever made. So,
yeah, I mean, I saw it when I was going over the list of N64 games to see what I would include, but I have no real experience with that series, and it just, this being my curated list, I just saw too many other games that I had to include that.
Well, I know you said stuff about licensing, but not having
that would be a problem.
No, that wouldn't be. Yeah. But not having GoldenEye, that would be a hard sell for a lot of people.
It would. But think about all the licensing hurdles you'd have to get over. Because it's not just that a studio they no longer own developed it.
Mm-hmm.
It is also a James Bond game.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure somebody else has the James Bond license right now.
Possibly.
I believe that somebody is EA or Activision. Do you want to deal with either of those and get the Rare rights to make that work? Would you even be at a break-even point?
I don't know. I mean, I guess if you put in Super Smash Bros. Instead, maybe that would help.
Maybe. I don't know that I wasn't incognizant of the fact that GoldenEye and Perfect Dark existed. Perfect Dark would probably be the easier one to make happen because Phil Spencer is super friendly. Okay. But GoldenEye, I just think there's too many hurdles. So that was why I didn't include them. And honestly, Quake 64, I included on a compensatory basis because you had to have a four-player shooter on there.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can't have GoldenEye, we can't have Perfect Dark, let's turn to Quake. Quake's a fantastic series. So that was kind of my thinking there.
Yeah.
So I was absolutely aware of that little wrinkle when putting this together. So that was my N64 list. Kayla, do you have any input?
Well, I think there would be two things that I would want to see on a Nintendo 64 Mini besides the ones that you mentioned. Okay. I have a real soft spot for Mortal Kombat 4. So I think the Nintendo 64 version was the best when it came to that game. I really wish they could make Pokemon Stadium work on a Nintendo 64 Mini, but I think that that would just basically be impossible, I guess. Because
No, I can see it. Make versions that... I mean, they had them on the Wii U. Just port those versions to the Switch and then let the Switch speak to the... Let the Switch speak to the N64 Mini over Wi-Fi. It would be a real pain in the ass, but that would be a way to make it happen. Because Pokemon Red and Blue were virtual console games on the Wii U. So they've got versions that are at least that recent. So that's how I would do it. So moving on, I've got a Dreamcast list here.
Okay.
And right out of the gate, Crazy Taxi.
Yeah. Yeah, and it would be hard because of all of the song licensing.
Yeah, and their way of getting around that has been less than ideal.
Yes.
But if that's what it takes to get that game on a Dreamcast Mini, I am willing to pay that price. Besides, once the system gets hacked, you can put an original 2000 ISO on it. And you're good to go at that point. Next up, another racing game, Daytona USA 2001. It was a divisive release. Still feels kind of weird to have that Hasbro splash screen on it. But yeah, I felt it was a very solid Dreamcast racing game that didn't really get its due because it showed up at the 11th hour. So I would definitely take this opportunity to make that right and include Daytona 2001 on there. Another one I was kind of on the fence about, and this is just because so many better versions of it have come along since then, Dead or Alive 2. Obviously, Dead or Alive 2 Hardcore was better. Obviously, Dead or Alive 2 Ultimate was better. But there was just something about this game when it came out a few months after the Dreamcast launched. You knew that it wasn't a flash in the pan with Soul Calibur, that more truly marquee fighting games were in the pipeline. And so I felt like just because of what it meant at the time, it was right to include it. Again, these are going to be racing heavy lists, flag to flag. A lot of people only know it as one of the demos that came with their launch Dreamcasts, but if you enjoyed that demo and you grabbed a copy of the full game, you got a really, really solid arcade racing game for your investment. And that was one that I made a point to pick up as quickly as I could find it. So I feel there might be some heavy licensing problems there. And so it's also a bit of a stretch because it also had cart licensing as well as the actual cart roster at the time. But I just really like to think that Sega could find a way to get it included because it was just that good. Next up, of course, Grandia 2. absolutely fantastic RPG. Really one of the flagship RPGs for the Sega Dreamcast, and it's still getting its due today because of the HD remaster. Clearly, Gung-Ho wants to get this game in the hands of as many people as possible, so I don't think it would be the slightest bit of trouble to get this included on the Dreamcast Mini. Now, the next one, I didn't think of any possible severe licensing issues at the time, but I still really don't, because, again, Phil Spencer is a really friendly guy, and Microsoft is on especially good terms with Sega. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would be difficult to get Hydro Thunder on a Dreamcast Mini. It was one of the best racing games on the launch of the system, and it has held up really well. Microsoft bankrolled a sequel to it on the Xbox 360 called Hydro Thunder Hurricane that is also really good. There's not a lot of Western titles on this list, so I think Hydro Thunder would be a really good representation. Actually, it might be the only Western title on this list now that I'm looking at it. Next up, Hello Again, imports made by Treasure, Ikaruga.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that has to be there. No question. It was probably one of two games that really got people turned on to Dreamcast imports back in the day. And if you play it, you'll understand why. It's as busy as Radiant Silvergun without having any of the cumbersome controls. It has a really simple concept, but will still beat the brakes off of you. So absolutely have to include Ikaruga on there. Too good of a game to pass up on, and too important to really the story of the Dreamcast as a platform. So we're going with that. Jet Grind Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Easily one of the best platformers on the system. Still holds up to this day. Still well established on some modern platforms or recent platforms by Sega. A few years ago, I was playing the shit out of it on the PlayStation Vita when they put it on there. So it's just one of those timeless classics and a franchise that they really should be looking into bringing back, because it's been almost 2 decades since Jet Set Radio Future.
Dang.
Yeah, that one hurts.
Yeah.
King of Fighters Dream Match 99. Mm-hmm. Sega did a good job of supporting 2D fighters back in the day, and King of Fighters Dream Match 99, better known as the King of Fighters 98, was one of the first, maybe even the first, of the 2D fighters to come off the line. I'm not sure if Marvel vs. Capcom arrived first or if it did, but it was one of the two. And Sega really threw a lot of support behind it. They had a link cable that would interface with the Neo Geo Pocket to unlock things in both Dream Match 99 and the King of Fighters R2 on the Neo Geo Pocket. It was a very Dreamcast-friendly installment of the series, and I think it was iconic enough that just because of when it was released, that it is worthy of a place on this list. So I wanted to include a King of Fighters game on there, and this had to be the one. Even though I did have other options, I just felt like when I think about King of Fighters on Dreamcast, this is the one that comes up. So, and it doesn't have a story that's connected to other games in the series, so there's no baggage. You don't feel like anything's missing, which is kind of miraculous considering how story heavy the KOF series is. Power Stone 2. Let's sell some controllers. Again, one game per franchise applies here. The original is probably more iconic, but the second game in the series has four players instead of two. And it amazes me that the Smash Brothers community never picked this up as an extra game for their events. So hopefully including it here on a Dreamcast Mini would kind of get some momentum going for it. And, you know, maybe, just maybe lead the way to a Power Stone 3. Because Capcom needs to start calling some of their classic franchises off the bench. And this will be a great way to do it. Sega Bass Fishing.
Okay.
The Dreamcast was an offbeat system. It had a lot of really experimental games. And I do feel like I underrepresented them here. But yeah, let's go for Sega Bass Fishing, if any of them. It plays well enough with the regular controller. You don't need the microphone attachment like Seaman had. You know, if we're going to do weird Sega, let's go here. So, of course, Sega Bass Fishing. And it was pretty iconic of the early days of the system, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it was an important title at the time. Sega Rally 2. Now, this one might have some emulation hurdles to get over because all of the existing Dreamcast emulators that have been made to date have not gotten along well with Windows CE. So there is that to consider. However, I think it would be worth the effort because Sega Rally 2 just might be the best racing game on the Dreamcast. And when you consider some of the competition that it has, that's a very bold statement. Just move mountains if you have to get it on there. I don't know. Maybe it would be easier to port the PC version. But get that game on the Dreamcast Mini in some form because it is that good. Next up, another obvious one, Shenmue.
Yeah.
It would probably be a giant load sitting on the system memory compared to all the other games. But, I mean, it is one of the system sellers. A lot of people bought Dreamcasts just to experience Shenmue. So you can't leave it off of here. Another one that is completely mandatory is Skies of Arcadia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Dreamcast was a little thinner on RPGs than other Sega platforms tended to be. But the few that it had were absolute must-own titles. So I wouldn't even hesitate to keep Skies of Arcadia on there. The obvious purchase of every launch system, Sonic Adventure, because duh.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really have anything else to say about that. It's, you can't have one of these mini systems without Sonic, and if you're going to put one of the two Sonic Adventures on there, it has to be this one. The other no-brainer from launch, Soul Calibur. Again, Namco, I think, is a really friendly company. I don't think it would be any trouble at all to get it licensed. And it defined the Dreamcast launch, even if it wasn't the flagship title of the launch. It sort of became that after the fact. So you have to include it on there. Another one that I feel is kind of weird Sega, not really to my, but it was popular enough that and keeps being brought back enough by Sega themselves that I think it's going to be on there, if they ever do one, of course, Space Channel 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I talked about Street Fighter Alpha 2 being kind of synonymous with 2D fighters on the Sega Saturn. I think that status on the Dreamcast, apart from KOF, goes to Street Fighter Alpha 3. So we've got a little bit of a synergy there. That was probably the best version of Alpha 3 for a long time. And it gave a lot of people reasons to buy Dreamcast arcade sticks. So I would absolutely include Alpha 3 on the Dreamcast Mini.
Yeah.
Next one was a little bit of a dud compared to expectations, but it was an important Sega title, and we need more RPGs on there. Time Stalkers.
God, yeah.
It's also another flavor of RPG from what we've been listing, so that would go on there. And then, of course, to wrap it up, Virtua Fighter 3 TV.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that makes up my vision of the Sega Dreamcast Mini.
Okay.
I've got some controller sellers on there. I've got the best examples of every genre, I feel, on there. I've got some good examples of their really offbeat experimental stuff. I feel like I ticked all the boxes. Do you?
There's one I would add, but I think it would be kind of hard because they wouldn't have the microphone attachment, of course, Seaman.
That was my reason for leaving it off.
Yeah.
So how about you, Kayla?
The one thing that I would probably add to that list would be the Typing of the Dead and have it work with any keyboard.
Any USB. Yeah, because controller ports would just be USB anyway. That's a good one. I like that. Yeah, that would work really well, actually. So, moving on, the PlayStation 2 Mini. This is a hard one to even think about just because of understanding the hardware realities, so I had to kind of put those aside for the sake of creating a list. But I kind of tried to consider space restrictions. I tried to include as many CD-based games as possible as opposed to DVD, which would just bloat the storage considerably. But I'm not sure I succeeded, so you can tell me after we get done with the list here. Capcom versus SNK2. Kind of the iconic 2D fighter of the platform. And really, it's one that's still played today. So, Capcom and SNK are both really easy to deal with. I don't think it would be a problem. Dark Cloud, because Sony had a lot behind this game. And it was supposed to be a flagship of the entire PlayStation brand, and it didn't quite turn out that way. But Level 5 still did a bang-up job with it, and it's something you can still go back to this day and enjoy it. But it's not so complex and cumbersome that you start it up after a long time and forget what you were doing. So that, I would say, makes it worthy of this list. And again, one game per franchise rule. I chose this one over its sequel just because I think the two games meant different things at the time. Okay. Next up, Dead or Alive 2 Hardcore. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, when I was doing the Dreamcast list, there are better versions of DOA 2 out there, and this is one of them. It was also one of the most important games on the launch. It was a DVD-based game, but that was largely because Team Ninja wanted to show off what the DVD format could do for quality of life changes compared to the CD format. And I think it was the right decision for them to go with. So it was definitely a marquee game on the launch. Next up, Devil May Cry. Speaking of early PS2 games that defined the platform, that is one of the best. And it still holds up to this day as evidenced through the magic of HD remasters. So there was no way I was going to leave that off. Mm-hmm. Next up, CD-based, check. Launch, check. Dynasty Warriors 2. Just a fun, dumb beat-em-up that showed off the PlayStation 2 hardware on launch day. And it created a formula that really works well for Koei to this day. So it would probably be good for people to be able to circle back and experience the first game of that style and see how that all started, because it kind of launched a genre all on its own. I mean, look at all the... I mean, Koei themselves have even spun it off into a bunch of licensed spin-offs. Then you've got other games like Soul Sacrifice or Ragnarok Odyssey to consider. They really did birth a genre with Dynasty Warriors 2. So, Final Fantasy X, obviously, the iconic RPG of the entire platform. Like, if there was one game out of all RPGs that came out on there, that's the one it had to be. And looking at the list now, that might be the case. That How do I have such a weak RPG list? God damn. Okay.
Well, there's always revisions for future podcasts.
Oh, yeah. So, spoiler alert on this one. No further RPGs. God of War, kind of the very symbol of what PlayStation was on the path to becoming as the PlayStation 2 phased out. And still a solid action game in its own right. Grand Theft Auto Vice City, again, one game per franchise rule. This was the one that, I mean, Grand Theft Auto 3 popularized GTA. Grand Theft Auto Vice City made it a pop culture phenomenon. And so I don't think you could get away with leaving that game off of this list at all, even in favor of GTA 3. Next up, Gran Turismo 3 A-Spec. Yes, GT4 is better, but GT3 has the E3 appearances, the hype buildup, the memorable quality of the release that makes it more of an icon of the PS2 than GT4 was. I mean, that was, even at the launch, even though it didn't make launch, people were citing that as one of the reasons they had to have a PlayStation 2. So, you don't hear people talking about GT4 that way. That's why I went with Gran Turismo 3 A-Spec. A few games on this list that aren't really to my taste, but I would be remiss to leave them off. Jak and Daxter, kind of the mascot platformer of the PS2. Eco, again, very iconic of what Sony was becoming at the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And another Koei title from the launch, Kessen. Mm-hmm. Let's get some of that historical strategy in there. So I had those on there. They're not really the kind of things I play, but they're important enough to the PlayStation 2 as a platform that they have to be included on here. And you're going to see a lot of examples of that mentality as I go through the rest of the list. But I did have to have kind of an indulgent pick there, and that's the King of Fighters 11. Still the only platform that has officially appeared on. So I think if you're going to put a KOF title on there, it makes sense to make that the one. Another early title that was a system seller, Metal Gear Solid 2. Again, Konami is very friendly to these. And if you remember back to E3 2000, that was almost all people were talking about was Metal Gear Solid 2. And the final product may not have lived up to the hype, due in large part to the main protagonist bait and switch, but it was still a technical marvel and a true accomplishment to raise the bar for what studios, you know, knew was possible on the PS2 hardware. So just for that fact, I think I have to include it on this list. Another mascot platformer, Ratchet & Clank, kind of became a PS2 icon following the system's biggest heyday, but it definitely stepped up and became the front and center platform brand for Sony, even to this day. Like, that's the platformer everyone's waiting to see on the PS5. So, I think for what it means now, we include that on this list, as opposed to Jak and Daxter for what it meant at the time. So there's kind of a synergy there. Resident Evil 4, I know it wasn't developed as a PlayStation 2 game, but I think if you put one Resident Evil title on here, it has to be that one. Because I don't think there were any Resident Evil titles, main series, that were made on and for the PlayStation 2. They were all ported from elsewhere.
Yeah.
They all came from the Dreamcast or the GameCube. So I didn't really become aware of that until just now. like when I was making these lists. So that's why I included this one. Going back to launch, going back to CD-based, going back to brands that are really deeply tied to the PlayStation, Ridge Racer 5, of course I was going to include it.
Mm-hmm.
Arcade racing is lifeblood, and there's not enough of it. Ridge Racer 5 may not have been one of the best installments of the series, but it was still very good. It still showed off the PlayStation 2 as well as any game did on the launch, and I still go back and play it to this day, even though it emulates like shit. You either get to choose fuzzy visuals or corrupted textures, but it's still fun enough that I want to pick it up every now and again and play it. So I do. Hopefully it would fare better on a PlayStation 2 Classic. Going over to the Sega side of things, Shinobi.
Ah.
Now this game does not get its due.
Mm-hmm.
The Shinobi is basically what I wanted Team Ninja's modern take on Ninja Gaiden to be. And getting it as Shinobi felt kind of like a very good silver medal. I love it. It had some odd mechanics to it, but all it really was a reimagining of having a time limit. So when I thought about it that way, I just felt like it was time limit added to the lore. And then it felt like a straight up action platformer title. That's what I want Shinobi and Ninja Gaiden to be. Another early game, another CD-based game, Silphied the Lost Planet. Gotta finish them up on there. And working designs did such a great job ironing out the bugs that were included in the original Japanese release. This is the one I'm picking. And it's not going to take a huge bite out of the system memory. It's going to be a really good time. It's only one player, which is kind of a bummer. But other than that, well, I just really love Silphied. And I played the shit out of this one when I first got my hands on it.
Yeah.
One of those PS2 games that slipped off the launch, too. I was really butthurt about that. We talk about the Dreamcast launch losing games. The PS2 had its fair share of casualties, and I was really pissed off about that one. But it was for the greater good because the programming work that Working Designs managed with this one compared to the Japanese version, yeah, it was absolutely worthwhile. Being that this is already a very Namco-friendly list, this is the retro mini I'm going to give Soul Calibur 2. It's not going to be on my GameCube list, but the PS2, I think, that was the version that seemed to get the most use by competitive players. And really, the controller just makes it feel right. So I feel like Soul Calibur 2 is a natural fit on a PS2 mini more than anything. Another fighting game, another CD-based game coming up here, Street Fighter EX3.
Mm.
Because PlayStation 2 also didn't get much custom-made Street Fighter for it, but it did get one in this form. Capcom, I'm sure, would be cool with it. Arika, I'm sure, would be cool with it. Let's go for that one. And then, following the same line of thought, made for the PS2, CD-based, and it was a launch game, Tekken Tag Tournament. And that game might have headlined the launch, you could say. Next up, let's get some multiplayer going. Time Splitters 2. Let's sell some multi-taps and controllers. Arguably the best game in the series. Yeah, I just think it fits perfectly on this list. It fills a void, and it is of high enough quality to deserve to be here. And finally, Virtua Fighter 4 Evolution. Because it's my list, and there was Virtua Fighter to be included. So why not go for one of the best games in the series? So, PlayStation 2 Mini. Thoughts?
I think those are solid.
All right. So you're not finding anything missing here?
Well, maybe some niche titles, but that's not really what, well, maybe it is what this is for.
Well, I had Kessen on there.
Yeah, there were so many. It's, I mean, that library was massive. It's really hard to think of any.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Coming up with a list of 20 to 25 games for the PS2, that's such a minuscule sample size of everything that system contained that yeah. it was next to impossible to get it whittled down that low. But somehow I managed it. Somehow it didn't involve any weeping. So, yeah, that is my PlayStation 2 list. Kayla, you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I think the only two things that I would add, one would be Zone of the Enders, because I think that again, that's another great Hideo Kojima game.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The second thing I would add would be Sonic Heroes, because that was the first Sonic game that was made after Sega went third party, and there's really no other way to play it unless you own an original Xbox or PS2, since it's never been re-released or has backwards compatibility. And I think a lot of GameCube, wasn't it? Fans want to play it. I'm sorry?
It was on the GameCube, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on the GameCube.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good point. Huh. Yeah, you're right. I didn't actually get to play that one, though. I guess my experience with Sonic Adventure 2 and then the reception Sonic Heroes got kind of scared me off. What was it like? Like, I know it had that team mechanic behind it. It kind of carried over from Knuckles Chaotix in a weird way.
I've been actually playing it because I've been trying to go for all the Sonic games for my YouTube channel, and I think it's pretty good. I think that it's worth including on any mini console or on a re-release. I think that maybe not as good as Sonic Adventure or Sonic Unleashed, but it's still definitely worth playing.
At least it's not 2006. Hmm. Okay. Well, I might have to look into that one. So finally, I curated a list for the Nintendo GameCube. And just like the N64, we're starting off with 1080 snowboarding, or in this case, 1080 Avalanche. I really do feel like it should get more attention, and Nintendo doesn't make bad racing games or bad racing-like games. So that one, I felt, was a must-have for the GameCube Mini. Another racing game, not from Nintendo, Auto Modelista. This is one that I've only come to truly appreciate lately. But do I ever appreciate it? There's really nothing else like it out there. Even I don't think the Initial D video games are as Initial D as Auto. It just gets the aesthetic down perfectly. And I don't think a lot of people got what it was trying to do when it was released over here back in the day. But if you can get the licenses for the cars and Capcom feels like taking the game out of mothballs, absolutely put Auto Modelista on the GameCube Mini because it deserves another go around. Next up, let's sell some controllers, Bomberman Generation. The single player aspect wasn't fantastic, but it's all about that multiplayer. The GameCube had those four controller ports for a reason, and unlike the N64 outings, Hudson got this version of Bomberman right for multiplayer. And so I would absolutely include that as a must-play multiplayer title on the GameCube. Maybe questionable licensing here, but Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem. Not something that I would necessarily play. My mom was all about it. And it's one of those games kind of like Diddy Kong Racing, where you bring up the platform and someone's going to mention this game.
Yeah.
Even though it was never really put front and center by the platform holder. It just has that cult appeal to it. And I think if you can get the rights to it, if Nintendo doesn't even have the rights, I'm sure on that, honestly. But I would absolutely include that. Something that is right up my alley, Fire Emblem Path of Radiance. Much like the N64, the The RPG selection on the GameCube was scarce, but it did do a little better in that regard. And yeah, Fire Emblem appeared on the platform. They finally enjoyed Western success with the series on the Game Boy Advance. And it is as necessary today as it was back then. F-Zero GX, again, duh. Like, you can't leave this game off of the system. Also a curiosity factor because it was not developed by Nintendo, but by Sega. So, a little bit of trivia there attached to F-Zero GX. And it was probably the best example ever of 3D F-Zero. Another racing game, Kirby's Air Ride, because Iwata. Absolutely. Gotta pay tribute. The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess.
Yeah, this is gonna be there.
This is the system it was developed toward, and this is the system I feel that it played best on. You still think back to that reception that it got at its first E3. And even though it took a long time to see its release from there, going back, it's the whole Metal Gear Solid 2 thing again. Just by virtue of the fact that this game existed and was shown, the hype was hard to describe to somebody who wasn't there. And so, as iconic as it is, it absolutely has to be included. And I told you another violation of the one game per franchise rules coming up. We're throwing Wind Waker on there too.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
As much as Twilight Princess was anticipated, Wind Waker was... It will always be remembered as the GameCube Zelda. Mm-hmm. Just because of when it came out and the approach that was taken to its development.
Yeah.
I think you kind of have to give it that, those props. Luigi's Mansion, mm-hmm. the launch flagship title, obviously has to be there. Mario Kart Double Dash, let's sell some controllers. Metroid Prime, no question. Probably the best single player experience on the system. No.
You know, it didn't strike a chord with me.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door.
Yes.
See, I've never even played that one. But
yes.
Yeah.
It's freaking amazing.
Yep. And everyone thought it was a joke when it was announced because Nintendo made the mistake of announcing it on April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
I still remember that. Phantasy Star Online Episode 1 and 2 Plus. Let's sell some controllers.
Yeah.
No, even without online play, this game deserves to be here because you have 4-player split screen.
That's true.
And if you want to put Wi-Fi capacity in it, who am I to judge? There are all kinds of fan servers around to this day for Phantasy Star Online. There's no reason why you wouldn't be able to rig a GameCube Classic up for one. So, why not? And this might be the only example of a game that I double-dipped on for two of my lists. Resident Evil 4 was made on and for the GameCube. And it was a remarkably important title when it came out. So I think it's important enough to the GameCube from a historical standpoint to include it here. Mm-hmm. And I immediately shove my foot in my mouth because right after that is another double dip in Skies of Arcadia Legends, which is pretty much the same as the Dreamcast game with a little bit of extra content. And that is, I say that from a position of absolute praise. Seriously, however, you have to experience this RPG because you owe it to yourself. Another game that they have that I know they have the rights to because of their IP, but was developed by a developer they no longer own, Star Fox Adventures. I can't say one way or the other how well it to this point, because I only did play it back when it came out. But if you think back to that era, you know, Nintendo had the big four games that everyone was looking forward to. It was Metroid Prime, Wind Waker, Super Mario Sunshine, which is the next item on this list. We'll just get it out of the way there. Mm-hmm. And Star Fox Adventures. And so I think just because they were coming from that point of having a big four titles to... I think that was the only time that the GameCube really stacked the deck like that, too. But being there at the time, I think you have to include all four of those games on the system. Just to experience, after the fact, that point in history. So, Star Fox Adventures, Super Mario Sunshine, and then, obviously, Smash Melee.
Mm-hmm.
That will sell all of the systems, you know it.
Yep, absolutely.
That will sell all of the controllers, you know it. I gave it a 10 way back in the Game Addicts days. It might have been one of the first 10s I ever gave a game, and deserved absolutely, without question.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, Wave Race Blue Storm. Another Nintendo system, another list ending with Wave Race. And mm-hmm. I didn't love this one like I loved Wave Race 64.
Yeah.
But it was close enough to Wave Race 64 that I still played the holy shit out of it. And I think it was one of two GameCube discs that I actually got in danger of wearing out. The other one obviously being PSO. I don't know how my mom didn't wear out her copy. She played it even more than I did. Like, I've put almost 700 hours into PSO2. And that's still not a fraction of what my mom put into PSO1.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was like that. So, that is my GameCube Mini. Any thoughts?
I have three thoughts, but I'll let Kayla go if she has any. Because I'm interested to see if she points out any of the three that I'm thinking of.
Well, the one that I think of, and it's my favorite game on the GameCube, and that's PN03. Which is the only Capcom 5 game that never got released on another system.
And I think
that game deserves a lot more love and respect than it got when it came out.
Yeah, I still have it sitting around waiting to be played, but I haven't played it yet, and I'm so frustrated about it. Maybe if I had played it, I would have. Mm-hmm. Thank you for reminding me. I will have to get to that pretty soon. So, okay, was that it?
Yeah, that's it. That's okay. The only one I can think of.
Okay, how about you, Teresa?
Well, of course, Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then... I appreciate you not disemboweling me outright.
Well, but also Beautiful Joe.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Because I did talk about the big four that Nintendo had in the pipeline. We didn't really touch on the Capcom 4. The Resident Evil 4, PN03, Beautiful Joe, and Dead Phoenix, the one that didn't actually make it to release.
The only other one, and I believe this was a launch title, and it was a freaking almost perfect launch title, Super Monkey Ball.
Oh my god, you're right.
Yeah.
See, that one I actually did forget because there's no way in hell I would that one. Yeah, you are 100% right. I didn't get it at launch, but I got it shortly after launch, and yeah, I love the hell out of it. How the fuck did I forget? Okay, well, yeah, it's you got so, me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, I've been playing that shit from the beginning. I played Marble Blast Ultra. I played Marble Madness. So, of course, I loved Super Monkey Ball. And how the hell I forgot it, I have no idea.
Because there's a lot to remember.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. That is our year-end special on curating retro minis. If we think of anything else to do, then we might have to revisit this again sometime, but I figured it was just a nice light topic to finish the year on, and hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed discussing them. So for Teresa Sammons, and Kayla Owen. I have been Patrick Mifflin. My voice is really raw. We will see you next time.